when a little light has been from time to time thrown down, like the feeble rays of a far-off star across the gloom of night, men have shut it up in darkness. They have been enveloped in self and shrouded in skepticism. They think the age of miracles has ceased. Another cause why these things have not occurred in past ages was the persecution of mediums. It was perceived that men would torture them. It alarmed the superstitious fears of the community. The mediums were charged with being witches, and in league with the devil. I see them on trial, then taken to the scaffold and the stake, and I hear spirit foot sounds accompanying them. The younger, more vigorous and more positive state of their accusers, under zeal for God and the good of His church, has made them admit themselves to be what they were not. Their defenseless, negative condition makes them an easy prey to the willpower of their judges and accusers. Now, I perceive the sorrow of those spirits who were not sufficiently developed to foresee the catastrophe as the higher spirits did. They are comforting them in their last earthly agony, and, seeing the sad results of their attempt to communicate through physical manifestations, they have suspended the effort till a more favorable epoch. When men are told that spirits watch over them, it is not uncommon for them to say, "Spirits should be in better business." The truth is that many men are so bad that they do not want their minds inspected, they do not wish to have it known how gross they are. A spirit wishes to express his idea of a hell. I see a mother with her children. She is training them in the path she herself has trodden. As she was ignorant and foolish, so are they. As her path had been beset with the briars and thorns which ignorance and folly engender, so is theirs. Now, I see her leave them and pass into the spirit world. But, impelled by the eternal and universal law of affinity, she still watches over them. Oh, the pangs of her spirit, for the wrong she has done, for the misery she has caused. Yet she follows them through all their devious windings, through darkness and through crime, and is it not hell enough? Oh, is it not hell enough? Again the scene changes, and I see what caused the sin of the mother. A drunken man presents himself, his children, comparatively pure and unsullied, seek associates, for all must have such, they would gladly choose the pure and the good, but they are the drunkard's children, and are spurned from the doors of the intelligent and cultivated. So they are driven back to darkness and ignorance, to glean from the great law of association the happiness for which every human being pants. They could not seek it where they would, they must get it where they can. Thus, with minds soured by the repulse they have met with, and their darker passions stimulated by the desire of revenge for injuries received, they plod along their devious and uncertain way, the prison their asylum, the halter their inheritance, the constable and sheriff their ministering angels. They asked society for meat, it gave them a scorpion, for bread, they got a stone. Oh, that men could see the cause of crime! Exclamation mark, they would love and pity. If one tree is blighted so that it cannot bear wholesome fruit, should the other trees call it evil? That which is evil cannot become good, but the undeveloped may progress to development. The tree whose root is rotten cannot grow, but if it has been merely scathed, a may. So with the spirit, though a long time may elapse, the bud, placed in the sunlight, does not blossom in a day, if placed in darkness, not for weeks. A spirit, after it has left the body, will have to throw off all the perversion that remains. After that is done, progression goes on without hindrance. Be not wise in your own conceit. Let him that standeth in the light of truth, take heed lest he fall through the darkness of his own wisdom. Dr. Hallock related some remarkable personal descriptions of spirits through Mr. Home, occurring on the same evening. One spirit was described as having been known here by the name of Elizabeth. Her person was described, and her prominent traits of character as well as the disease of which she died, with such accuracy, that a gentleman present knew her at once from the description. The only inaccuracy that he could point out, being the color of her hair, which had been described as brown, when in fact it was rather a light auburn. In explanation of which, Mr. Holmes said, "When I look at the forehead, which is very white, which was the fact, the hair looks brown to me." The gentleman, a clergyman, declared that he was not thinking of her at all, and she was brought to his recollection solely by the accuracy of the description given. Mr. Holmes then said, "I see an old woman, and her name is Abigail. They called her Aunt Abby." To the question, "How did she look?" he commenced by compressing the lips and cheeks in such a way as to indicate a person who had lost her teeth. This at once brought to his mind an old lady of that name, called by the whole family Aunt Abby, who died in the spring of 1817, when he was some 11 years of age. The appearance assumed by the medium was that of the last impression left upon his mind. She was an old woman, had prominent features, had lost her teeth for many years, was much emaciated by her last illness, and as her body lay in its grave clothes, the thought of his young mind, as he stood gazing upon it, was that quite peculiarity first indicated by the medium. Her nose and chin nearly met, so acute was the angle formed by her attenuated gums and shrunken lips. Many other facts were given, going to show the identity of the two individuals in question. But one great object seemed to be to teach us, by taking persons not thought of at the time, in the last case not thought of for many years, that it was no psychological impression from our own minds, as some have supposed, for there was no known impression of the kind existing at the time, and the memory was only awakened by the accuracy of the pictures which the medium had presented. Another equally interesting and accurate description of a spirit, who said his name was William, was given. Previous to the announcement of his presence and name by Mr. Holmes, and while he was engaged in the other delineation, a lady of high clairvoyant powers, through whose mediumship some of the most sublime lessons of truth and wisdom have been from time to time communicated, had written and shown to a gentleman sitting by her, the following sentence: "I am impressed that my father is here and standing by my side. I feel his presence distinctly." When Mr. Holmes had said, "There is a spirit present and his name is William," he asked, as if to gratify his own curiosity, "Who is William?" And then immediately said, "Oh, he says, Eliza knows me." The lady's name was Eliza, and the spirit was her father. His appearance and prominent traits of character were delineated with great accuracy. Here at New York I made the acquaintance of Dr. Gray, one of the most eminent physicians there, and for whom I have ever had the deepest affection and esteem. He and his kind wife have given me counsel, and befriended me at all times, and under all circumstances. From his character and attainments, he was eminently suitable as an investigator of phenomena, requiring a calm, dispassionate judgment, and the testimony of such a man is, in itself, a sufficient answer to all the doubts of unthinking persons. I had also the pleasure of meeting Judge Edmonds, so well known as one of the judges of the Supreme Court. He investigated this subject in the most painstaking manner for 3 years, and was fully convinced, not only through the mediumship of others, but through his own and that of his daughter, a lady well known for her purity of mind and truthful nature. He was a frequent visitor to me, and saw all the phenomena which occurred in my presence. I was also acquainted with the late Professor Hare, the eminent chemist and electrician, and with Professor Mapes, so well known in agricultural chemistry, and for his acquaintance with this subject. A conference was formed at New York, which has met weekly for many years for the investigation of spiritual phenomena, and from its recorded transactions, I make the following extract: Friday evening, July 18, 1852. Dr. Hallock related the case of physical manifestations which took place on the Friday evening previous, at the house of Mr. Partridge, after the conference had adjourned. Mr. D. D. Holmes was the medium, and the circle consisted of Mr. Partridge, and his wife and daughter, Mr. W. Taylor and wife, Mr. S. B. Britton, and himself. On the table around which we were seated, were loose papers, a lead pencil, two candles and a glass of water. The table was used by the spirits in responding to our questions, and the first peculiarity we observed, was, that however violently the table was moved, everything on it retained its position. When we had duly observed this, the table, which was mahogany and perfectly smooth, was elevated to an angle of 30 degrees, and held there, with everything remaining on it as before. It was interesting to see a lead pencil retaining a position of perfect rest, on a polished surface inclined at such an angle. It remained as if glued to the table, and so of everything else on it. The table was repeatedly made to resume its ordinary position and then again its inclination as before, as if to fasten upon us the conviction that what we saw was no deception of the senses, but a veritable manifestation of spirit presence and of spirit power. They were then requested to elevate the table to the same angle as before, and to detach the pencil, retaining everything else in their stationary positions. This was complied with. The table was elevated, the pencil rolled off, and everything else remained. They were then asked to repeat the experiment, retaining the pencil and everything else upon the table stationary, except the glass tumbler, and to let that slide off. This also was assented to, with the like result. All the articles retained their positions but the tumbler, which slid off and was caught in the hands of one of the party, as it fell from the lower edge of the table. Then the table, after being restored to the natural position, was moved strongly to and from Mr. Home, and to and from different individuals in the circle, as they requested. After this had been repeated several times, and while a corner of the table was inclined into his lap, Mr. Taylor asked if the spirits would lift it clear of the floor, while it was in that inclined position. Assent was signified, and the table, after much apparent effort, was lifted clear of the floor as requested. Dr. Hullock said he was led to the conclusion that the effort was only apparent, because, while we were watching it closely, with a light upon the floor so as to see the slightest motion, the table in the meantime resting upon one castor oil, the floor and one corner of the leaf in Mr. Taylor's lap, was raised perhaps about 1 inch, after having been literally tumbled about the circle, sometimes upon one castor and sometimes upon two, the leaf resting first in one person's lap and then in another. But when the foot of the table was finally raised, as described, he, to make sure that they were not mistaken in the fact, got down upon the floor to observe more closely. While looking, the foot of the table, instead of being raised a doubtful inch or so, was thrown up, clear of the floor, 6 or 8 inches, as if all former attempts had been mere playful efforts. We then asked if they could move the table with a man on it. They replied, yes, with 2 men on it. Mr. Partridge and I then seated ourselves back to back upon the table. Our combined weight is a little over 350 pounds, but notwithstanding, the table was moved as easily as when nothing but the candlesticks and the other things were upon it. We were rocked backward and forward, to and from Mr. Home, the table was tipped from the medium and held stationary in that position, with us upon it, and finally we said playfully, when you get tired of rocking us, throw us off. It was done. The table was tipped strongly and rapidly from Mr. Home, and we were thrown on the floor. At the end of June I received the following letter from Dr. Hull, Newburgh, Orange Company on the Hudson. My dear sir, I am desirous that you should make me a visit, for myself and some intimate friends, at your first leisure, or freedom from present engagements. I will meet all your expenses from your place, during your stay here, and for your return, and $5 a day for 10 days, that is $50. I do sincerely trust you will answer me promptly as to the time you can make me the desired visit, and if my proposition as to terms be not satisfactory, state what your terms are. All shall be made satisfactory to yourself, by addressing a letter to my direction, Newburgh, N.Y., it will soon reach me. I regretted I did not see more of you in New York, but I hope to have the pleasure fully made up here. Mr. Edward Fowler has promised to come up when you visit me. Very truly yours, and C. A. Gerald Hull, D. D. Home, Esquire. In reply to this, I informed him that I was not a paid medium, but that I should be happy to visit him, as he requested. I did so, and whilst with him manifestations of a very interesting character occurred to a family who had been deeply afflicted in the loss of their children. They and Dr. Hull took a great interest in my welfare, and feeling the importance of my completing my education, which from ill health had been much neglected, and of preserving me from the wearing excitement of the life I was then leading, they kindly proposed a home for me in their midst. I could not then avail myself of their offer, having promised to visit many friends during the autumn, but in the following year, as will be seen, I placed myself under their guidance. In August, I went on a visit to Mr. Cheney, at South Manchester, Connecticut, and it was at his house that I was first lifted in the air, a manifestation which has since frequently occurred to me both in England and France. The following is the description of the evening, in the words of a gentleman who was present. On the 8th instant, in company with three gentlemen from this city, the writer paid a visit to Ward Cheney, Esquire, residing in Manchester, at whose house Mr. Daniel D. Home was temporarily stopping. A circle was formed, and the well-known vibrations on the table were soon loud and distinct. One of my friends had never seen anything of the kind, and he accordingly looked under the table to make sure that no one touched it. Answers of a personal character, such as tests of identity, were given very freely. Mr. Home was then thrown into a spiritually magnetic state, discovering great rigidity of muscle, and the ordinary phenomena of the psychomagnetic condition, including a magnetic locking of the jaws, in which an iron-like hardness of the muscles was apparent. He then spelt out, with his eyes closely bandaged, some remarkable and interesting messages to one or two of the company, the personal nature of which precludes their publication, but which were declared by those interested to be perfect tests. He did this by pointing, with almost incredible rapidity, to the different letters of an alphabet arranged on a 7x9 card, and thus spelling out the necessary words. A rapid writer had difficulty in keeping up with him, and when a word or a sentence was partially finished, a suggestion from any of the company as to what was intended to be spelt, would, if correct, be answered by eager and vehement rappings in various parts of the table. Among others, all remarkable, came a message from two sailors lost at sea, relatives of one of the company, a stranger to most of those present. These spirits announced themselves, somewhat unexpectedly, by canting over the solid and ponderous table, and rolling it in the manner of a vessel in a violent tempest. Accompanying this demonstration came a violent creaking as of the cables of a ship when strained in a gale, then came the loud sound of a prolonged wailing, shrieking blast of wind, precisely such a noise as the wind makes in the rigging of a ship in a storm at sea, and the creaking of the timbers and masts as the vessel surged to one side or the other was distinctly heard by all. Next came the regular, sullen shocks of the waves as they struck the bows of the doomed vessel. All this time the table kept up the rocking motion, and now the large table was capsized on the floor. All this was done with no one touching the table, as a close and constant scrutiny was kept up by two, at least, of our party. These two sailors, whose names and ages were given, it seems lost their lives by the capsizing of the vessel as represented, although this fact, I have the best of reasons for knowing, could not previously be known to Mr. Home or to any of the company excepting myself. Demonstrations now increased in force and number. Several tunes were rocked out by the table when no one touched it, the circle being seated a couple of feet, at least, from it. The swing or motion of the table was a full 3 feet from the floor at each elevation, and the tune was kept with singular accuracy. A simultaneous expression from all the members of the circle attested their recognition of the several tunes as they were thus performed for our satisfaction. The table was actually lifted up from the floor, without the application of a human hand or foot. A table weighing, I should judge, 100 pounds, was lifted up a foot from the floor, the legs touching nothing. I jumped upon it, and it came up again. It then commenced rocking, without, however, allowing me to slide off, although it canted at least to an angle of 45 degrees. Finally, an almost perpendicular inclination slid me off, and another of the company tried it with the same results. These are things all happened in a room which was light enough to allow of our seeing, under and over, and all around the table, which was touched by no one except the two persons who respectively got upon it to keep it down. We went into a darkened room to see the spiritual flashes of light said to have been vouchsafed to some investigators. Instead of this, we were greeted with tremendous rappings all about us. Some of the blows on the walls, floor, and tables, within 3 inches of myself, were astounding. I could hardly produce such violent demonstrations with my fist, though I were to strike with all my might. The very walls shook. Answers to questions were given by concussions of varying force and intonation, according to the character of the spirits communicating. A favorite little daughter of one of the gentlemen present, a stranger from a remote state, who had left the earth almost in infancy, announced her presence by a thick pattering rain of eager and joyful little raps, and in answer to an inward request of her father, she laid her baby hand upon his forehead. This was a man who was not a believer in these things, he had never before seen them, but he could not mistake the thrilling of that spirit touch. I also had a similar manifestation, in the character of which I am not deceived. Suddenly, and without any expectation on the part of the company, Mr. Home was taken up in the air. I had hold of his hand at the time, and I and others felt his feet, they were lifted a foot from the floor. He palpitated from head to foot apparently with the contending emotions of joy and fear which choked his utterance, and again he was taken from the floor, and the third time he was carried to the lofty ceiling of the apartment with which his hand and head came in gentle contact. I omitted to state that these latter demonstrations were made in response to a request of mine that the spirits would give us something that would satisfy everyone in the room of their presence. The medium was much astonished, and more alarmed than any of the rest, who, I may add, took the matter calmly, though they were intensely interested. During these elevations, or levitations, I usually experience in my body no particular sensations than what I can only describe as an electrical fullness about the feet. I feel no hands supporting me, and since the first time, above described, I have never felt fear, though should I have fallen from the ceiling of some rooms in which I have been raised, I could not have escaped serious injury. I am generally lifted up perpendicularly, my arms frequently become rigid and drawn above my head, as if I were grasping the unseen power which slowly raises me from the floor. At times when I reach the ceiling, my feet are brought on a level with my face, and I am as it were in a reclining position. I have frequently been kept so suspended 4 or 5 minutes, an instance of which will be seen in an account which is given of occurrences in the year 1857, at a chateau near Bordeaux. I have been lifted in the light of day upon only one occasion, and that was in America. I have been lifted in a room in Sloane Street, London, with 4 gas lights brightly burning with 5 gentlemen present, who are willing to testify to what they saw, if need be, beyond the many testimonies which I shall hereafter adduce. On some occasions the rigidity of my arms relaxes, and I have with a pencil made letters and signs on the ceiling, some of which now exist in London. During this autumn and winter, I visited private families with whom I had become acquainted, and never a day passed without some manifestations occurring. These are for the greater part of a private nature, appealing to the sympathies of relatives and friends, and could not properly be given to the world. They are to me, however, as to them a dear reminiscence of the loving guidance of departed friends, who find their highest happiness in ministering to and consoling those who remain to fulfill their pilgrimage here. They ever say that God in His loving kindness allows this, and that as He is an everywhere present God, and can bear with our shortcomings, they having been mortals like ourselves, can the more readily understand the weaknesses of our human nature. During the time I have already spoken of as my public life, I have met with thousands, many of whom disbelieved even the existence of the soul after death, and some who denied the existence of a God. Amongst these were even clergymen, who told me that though they had preached the gospel, they themselves had never been fully convinced of existence in an afterlife. From the letters of a friend, an Episcopal bishop, I make the following extract. You have the pleasant assurance of having been the instrument of conveying incalculable joy and comfort to the hearts of many people. In the case of sorrow, you have changed the whole aspect of their existence, and you have made dwelling places light, that were dark before. I went from Hartford to Springfield, to spend a few days with Mr. Almer, and although at this time I did not hold seances, still the power was constantly with me in some form or other, as will be seen from the following. While Mr. Alderson was at my house, Mr. Home called to see us, having been absent a long time. Soon after he arrived, he was taken with severe sickness, from which A. attempted relief by bathing his head. During the process, Mr. Home was thrown into the spiritual condition and described Mr. A.'s father and sister, spoke their names and that of his mother, and the spirit of the father, while addressing his son, called him correctly by his Christian name, which Mr. Home had no means of knowing, neither did he know the names of Mr. A.'s parents, which, he assured us, were known only to himself, as he had not mentioned them this side of Baltimore. On going to Boston my power returned, and with it the more impressive manifestations of music, without any earthly instrument. At night, when I was asleep, my room would be filled, as it were, with sounds of harmony, and these gradually grew louder, till persons in other parts of the house could hear them distinctly. If by chance I awakened, the music would instantaneously cease. Chapter 3. Further Manifestations in America. The year 1853 was spent under the guidance of three friends, and during the summer months I resided at Newburgh on the Hudson River, where my time was passed in the completion of my studies. I was at the Theological Institute, but only as a boarder, and in no way included in the theological classes. While here, I had an extraordinary vision, which is still so vivid, that I remember it in all its details. The institute was built on an eminence, commanding a view of peculiar beauty. Below lay the city, on the right, the river was lost in its windings among the rocky hills surrounding West Point, on the left, it lay in expanse, and could be traced for a distance of many miles. Behind, spread out the country, with its pretty little farmhouses dotted here and there. I have sat for hours of an evening, watching the feeble flickering lights, and endeavoring to picture in my imagination the life emotions which must from time to time have crossed those thresholds. Now, fancy pictured to me a young girl, on whose form time and care had passed but as an evening breeze, and a little further off it was, perchance, a mother whose little one was suffering, and every beat of whose feeble pulse she had counted, with that hope which only a mother may know, as she prays God to spare the pure, gentle, and loving little one, whom He has given her. Anon, it was one bowed down with age and sorrow, all that he had loved had gone to their rest, and he was alone in the world. Bright pictures of his youth flitted before him, but these only augmented his loneliness, for the light of the past had brought out in deeper contrast the shadows of the present. These and similar trains of thought often occupied my idle hours, and, at times, these fancied scenes became as it were real, and furnished ample resource to a mind, naturally inclined to dwell on subjects beyond the little narrow circle of everyday life. One evening I had been pondering deeply on that change which the world calls death, and on the eternity that lies beyond, until wearied I found relief in prayer, and then in sleep. My last waking consciousness had been that of perfect trust in God, and a sense of gratitude to Him for the enjoyment I received from contemplating the beauties of the material creation. It might have been that my mind was led to this by the fact of my having watched a beautiful star as it shone and twinkled in the profound stillness of the night. Be this as it may, it appeared to me that, as I closed my eyes to earthly things, an inner perception was quickened within me, till at last reason was as active as when I was awake. I, with vivid distinctness, remember asking myself the question, whether I was asleep or no, when, to my amazement, I heard a voice which seemed so natural, that my heart bounded with joy as I recognized it as the voice of one, who while on earth was far too pure for such a world as ours, and who, in passing to that brighter home had promised to watch over and protect me. And, although I well knew she would do so, it was the first time I had heard her voice, with that nearness and natural tone. She said, "Fear not, Daniel, I'm near you. The vision you are about to have is that of death, yet you will not die. Your spirit must again return to the body in a few hours. Trust in God and His good angels, all will be well." Here the voice became lost, and I felt as one who at noonday is struck blind, as he would cling even to the last memories of the sunlight, so I would fain have clung to material existence, not that I felt any dread of passing away, nor that I doubted for an instant the words of my guardian angel, but I feared I had been over presumptuous in desiring knowledge, the very memory of which might disturb my future life. This was but momentary, for almost instantaneously came rushing with a fearful rapidity memories of the past. My thoughts bore the semblance of realities, and every action appeared as an eternity of existence.